Hello, and welcome to episode 104 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mouse from Mars, and as always, I'm joined by comic artist, writer and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man of a thousand feces, hold on, I've written that wrong, faces, it's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Did I hear a little clink of ice in your glass? In have you got ice in your squash this evening?
Oh. I do have ice. Yes.
Oh yes.
Is it,
good.
Is it squash, Dan?
No, I bought myself a can of Coca-Cola. there are many other so fine fizzy drinks available.
We're so fucking rock and roll, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm trying to give it up because essentially it's just black poison, isn't it?
Yeah.
Coke. It's fucking grim. But there you go. Would pep me up for tonight's show, which is going to be fantastic.
Look, we don't have a guest, so you don't have to brown nose anyone, and we know what you're really like, Butcher. So, oh dear, yes, we don't have a guest this week, folks. So, and basically, it's just going to be comics talk. It's just going to be the three of us sat in a dark room talking to each other like we like each other.
Yeah,
should be interesting.
All lies there.
All lies indeed. Now, to start us off, obviously when we did last week's show, we recorded that early.
Because it's your birthday.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you have a nice birthday, by the way?
It was lovely. I went to see some fish.
Did you?
Yeah. Awesome.
Did you go to the aquarium?
I did indeed.
All right.
Yeah.
You've just got this weird thing for sharks, haven't you?
I love sharks and octopus. Pie. Is that the plural of octopuses?
Is he the bloke who does those? Is it octopi? Is he the bloke who does those sort of ranty videos on Facebook?
Probably. Yeah.
There's a reason they can't keep great whites in captivity. They die. I can't remember what the reason is for that.
All right. Is it a metaphor for your life?
a complicated one, yes.
Yes. No, I had a lovely birthday, thank you very much, and I got plenty of graphic novels and stuff that I'm working through.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, one of which I'll be recommending later this evening.
But
one of them I got was a volume one of the Teen Titans, the first Marv Wolfman.
George Perez thing.
Yeah, the George Perez one.
That's nice.
It was great, and I tell you what, it was from the moment that they first get together. Do you know what I mean? It was.
The new Teen Titans,
which is Robin, Changeling, as he wanted to be called, wasn't it? Yeah. Who was the other ones?
Yeah, Starfire, Raven, Cyborg.
Yeah. How old was Cyborg when that started?
I'm not sure. Well, presumably a teenager, but I don't know.
But he's a fairly new character at that time, I think, wasn't he?
I think that was his first appearance, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
I could be wrong, but but it just brought back memories of when I used to read it in the reprints. It was sort of like one of the back issues, probably in a Batman or something. I can't remember what it was now.
It appeared as like a free preview, didn't it, in a comic?
Yeah.
Was it something weird like Masters of the Universe or something weird was it?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah, it includes the sort of prequel sort of preview thing to start off. So it tells the whole story from the beginning. It just brought back so many good memories.
That's nostalgia avenue there, isn't it?
Yeah, just reading it, I just thought, this is just good comics. And it's just great stuff.
DC's really pushing Cyborg now, or they have been for a while.
Yeah,
he's a good character in that. I like the relationship he has with Changeling's great little...
Oh yeah, Changeling was one of my favourite DC characters when I was a kid as well.
Yeah.
I don't know why, he was just cool.
Yeah. He was, wasn't he? He was sort of snarky before snarky was cool, wasn't he?
Yeah. And you had that, he kept saying all these one-liners, then I think there was some panel where it says, you know, when you have the voice in your head, and it's like, oh, if only they knew, the jokes are just to cover up what's going on inside. Ah! You know, that's all over there.
That's what my inner monologue says all the time.
Only it has a lady's voice.
The X-Men series, like the Claremont X-Men series, often that was like how he did a teen book. But I think the Teen Titans definitely had a hand in that, like the intergroup dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, kind of, and the Legion. I think the Legion at the time as well was very good. Yeah, I think they were the sort of three, you know, and the Avengers, I suppose. But yeah, it was X-Men, Teen Titans, wasn't it? Sort of across the two companies, I think. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was probably a real boom period for those sort of teen heroes as well, wasn't it? That got a real, along with Teen Titans. Was there a lot of young Marvel heroes at that time?
I can't think of. I suppose you had Nova just around that time, didn't you, as well?
Yeah.
That's you, I suppose. Yeah. Was that a big hardback, is it? Or?
No, it's just a paperback sort of, but it's good 200 odd pages, I think. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Cool. It's just great stuff. Yeah. I'm sort of in this moment where I want to sort of get some collected editions of some of the earlier comics I used to read when I was a kid, just to,
yeah,
you know, that I'm really hitting this sort of nostalgia button at the moment, because I treat myself to the epic collection of Excalibur.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, well. You sent me that picture. Yeah,
yeah. And that's Excalibur, like, from the beginning as well. So just those two books, I was just in hog heaven. It was just amazing. They were probably two of the books that I loved most when I was a kid.
So yeah, cool.
Just great stuff. Great stuff. Yeah. But, so that was... my birthday was nice. Thank you very much.
You got a few nice presents, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. Thank you to Tony and Dan. They're too nice. they are actually too nice to me, people. They really are. So, I have a lot of books to work through. So,
yeah, I'm desperate to hear about the one I got you. See what you think of it.
Well, I have never read From Hell.
Yeah, it's a difficult book to read. It's not a simple book.
It's a difficult book to lift up. It's a big No. Thank you to everyone for the birthday messages, and, you know, to you guys for the gifts. They're just awesome. So I got lots.
You don't turn 45 every day, do you? Do you know what I mean?
No. Well, actually, it's 49. Next year's the big one. But also around that weekend, Tony managed to go out to a comic book show, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I went to LCAF.
Yeah, you've. Yeah. I mean, no doubt a lot of our listeners have already read the article about it, whether it be it was on Never Iron Anything, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then I think John cross-pollinated it to down the tube. So, yeah, it got quite a few reads on the blog, actually. It's about the third biggest thing I've ever put up, which I was quite surprised at. But, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a great, a fucking brilliant day. Absolutely the most boiling hot day ever. And it was in a sort of quite a crowded venue, which is evidence of the fact that it was very well attended. You know, on anything.
Which day did you go? Did you go on the Friday? Was that?
I went the Friday and the Saturday. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, I went half the Saturday. I went on the Friday, sort of rushed there from work, and had a sit down with Sam Arthur, who we spoke to before on the show, Angela Francis, who runs LCAF, and was kind of my first contact at Nobrow, really. She's now gone sort of freelance, but she also has continued to run LCAF very successfully with a lady called Lagaya Salazar. Equally great fun, and I sat down and had a chat with them, and they sort of talked me through how they work out curating an event like that, which is really interesting, actually, because they get so many people applying for it now. They're trying to spread bet the tables, so you don't get the same crowd there on the Friday that you get on the Saturday.
Okay.
Which is an interesting talking point from where we came from last week. And I think it's the Friday was quieter, so I think you're less likely to do as much business on a Friday.
Mm.
But at least it gets you in the door of LCAF, and there's a lot of interesting people there. Drawn and Quarterly, Jonathan Cape, Centrala, Self-Made Hero, and No Brown Flying Eye, as well as some other big companies, you know. So if you're a small presser, I recommend if they say to you, we can't get in the whole weekend, but we've got a table for the Friday, you take it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And they were telling me that, you know, we try and get as many people in as we can. You know, we appreciate, you know, the amount of applications. I know Sarah said she'd applied for it, didn't she?
Yeah.
And that she hadn't got in. And I think they are trying their best, you know what I mean, for a very popular event. I think the problem they've got is they get assistance, sort of local council stroke arts council assistance to run it, because it's an expensive event to run at the venue. But I think if they go up to the next sort of level of venues, you start hitting stuff like the Design Centre and stuff like that, you know, where London Super Comic Con is going to be. And then it becomes too expensive. They just can't manage it. So they've got this venue which they're sort of desperate to keep hold of, but are worried that the price might go up next year, for example. But yeah, it's interesting. The dynamics of it are really interesting. These people work really hard organising it. You know, I have to say, all the helpers and that, to a person, were coming up and chatting and asking, you know, what sort of thing you're looking for, and just really helpful. You know, there was nobody looking bored, no one with a frown on their face. You know, everyone was sort of really friendly as you went in the door.
Brilliant. You
know, awesome. Quite kid-friendly. There was a little sort of kid-friendly area at sort of the Saturday, and I suspect the Sunday as well. But I basically did Friday, did the rounds on Friday and got to see everyone and got some, bought some great comics. And then on the Saturday, I ended up doing the morning with Ken Reynolds, and then ended up going in the pub with Dave White and Stuart McCune for about 5 hours. So we kept saying, should we go back in? And we kept saying, well, we'll have one more, then think about going back in. It was one of those sort of things, you know.
Yeah.
I've just got a little list of people, if you don't mind. Yeah, so Ken and Claire Reynolds, a great company, and wandered around with them, had a real laugh. Josh Hicks, who I'll be talking about later, he was releasing Human Garbage. Todd Oliver, I think we've got a little interview we might put in this episode, and we, Vince,
we'll probably put it in a minute once you've
idea.
Carry on.
Ricky Miller, Tilly Walden, Elise Weaver. I recently reviewed her book Something City, which is a really nice book, really new thing from Avery Hill. Andy Barron, who had his new comic out called Tantra. Yeah, top stuff. And everyone really was there. It was a really good day, really friendly. And you come away from not a TV star in sight, you know, and you come away from it and you think, that's quite inspiring. You know, there's a lot of people who are turning up and thinking, oh, I could do this and I can have a go at that. And
brilliant.
Everyone was sort of very open with their advice. And yeah, great, great day. Yeah, well, I recommend it to anyone, either as an exhibitor, if you can get in, or just as a visit. I know Ken had a great day. I was chatting to Ken about it. I know he's been reviewing some of the books he's bought over the last few days on his Facebook account, the Sliced account. Really good. Yeah. It's www.elcaf.co.uk, or on Twitter it's elcaf. So it's ElcaFest. So Elcafest.
What's the abbreviation? What's that abbreviated for people who are unaware?
Oh, sorry. East London Comics Art Fair.
Excellent.
Yeah, art festival, sorry. Yeah, but for a £10 ticket for all weekend as well. It's not
that's
bad,
good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's good.
That's quality.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't get in for a day most conventions with that, would you, these days?
Yeah. What was that? Right. With the weather being so stifling, and yes, it was glorious, but I don't know about you, it was too hot for me. You know, I'm usually hunched over a drawing board or playing video games. I'm not, you know, my underdeveloped subterranean eyes aren't made for the sunlight. So what was it like in the venue? Was it?
Yeah, it was very hot inside. But what it's got like a circular, it's an old, I think it's an old, it's called the Round Chapel. Oh my God, what was that? Someone just...
My mic just touched my t-shirt.
And above it is a sort of, I suppose, where you would sit if you're in church. There's like a gallery above it, and you could sit in that and get a bit of air, and that was quite nice. And outside they had like food wagons and coffee wagons and drinks wagons and stuff like that, and loads of tables outside as well. There were quite a few talks. Didn't actually manage to get to any of the talks in the end, but yeah, and also some sort of how to work, how to draw, how to publish, you know, this sort of type talks. Yeah, very good. Yeah,
nice. Definitely go see if I can. Is it normally this time every year?
Yeah, pretty much, I think. Yeah, I only realised that because last year it was fucking boiling as well. So yeah. I suspect it's about the same time.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the tables go out about December. I think they stick the applications out for tables about then. Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to do a shout out when that goes live then later in the year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as Tony said, we got a little bit of audio from one of our faves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good lad, Todd, actually. And I highly recommend that book he talks about. So.
Yes. So here you are. Mr. Todd Oliver talks to Tony Esmond. Oh, legendary. Here you go.
Gold right there.
So I'm at Elcaf. His first interview. I mean, he just walked in and walked straight into Todd Oliver, who's done one of our favourite books, Boxes. I know Vince reviewed it a few months ago now, Todd, I would say.
Probably about 6 months ago, I think it was. Time flies, but the last one, issue one would have come out summer of last year. Issue two came out, I think, January of this year, so it would have been nice.
And you're here with issue three, yeah?
Yes, yeah, so I've been sitting on that for a while. It got printed in May, but I promised Elcaf that I would debut it here, so it's the first time it's seeing the...
So that's part of the condition for Elcaf, is that you have something new, maybe, or is it part of a sort of when they write to you? Do you have that kind of conversation with them, do you?
As part of the form that you fill in, I'm sure there's a bit in there that says about, are you going to be releasing anything, debuting something at Alcaf? I think it's optional, but it probably puts you in better stead for being accepted.
So tell us a little bit, what is Boxes about? Because it's pretty out there, isn't it?
I still haven't come up with a nice succinct sales pitch just yet. But like what Vince said when he first reviewed it, and when he kind of looked at the second issue, I think it's very reminiscent of like Monty Python's. It's a Terry Gilliam's kind of the stop motion stuff there that I can remember watching when I was a little kid before I even really understood the humour of Monty Python itself. A little bit kind of intertwined with maybe like League of Gentlemen
I can definitely see that. Yeah,
everything is tinged with a level of dark humour, but also it's quite immature too. And but my style as well. I think the illustrator's style kind of jars a little bit with what you might expect. It's very cartoony. It's very kind of almost Simpson-esque in the way that I kind of draw the characters. That I can maybe get away with doing more grotesque things to them.
So is this your first attempt at sequential, is it? Because you know, you've only got Boxes on the table here. Have you done stuff before that we don't know about? Or
I did do some webcomics back in the early 2000s. It was very derivative of what was out at the time, but I needed to kind of flex my creative muscles some way, and I wanted to just produce something. So even though I was kind of semi-happy with the style, the writing and stuff was pretty naff. Like, I suppose most people can say back when they were a lot younger, they didn't,
So it's all practice, though, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So this is the first time, really, that in about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, I've taken things seriously again with it's my hobby, really, my pastime that... and just promised myself that even if it's an hour a day, that I do some drawing. So it's become a bit of a good habit, really.
So have you got a background in art or design at university or college or anything like that?
I did a degree in design, but interactive design. So, you know, back when CD-ROMs were still around, that the interface for when you buy a single and have a video that would play on there, from off the back of that, I got a job in graphic design. So I work predominantly in print as part of my day job, and then to kind of allow me to flex my creative muscles even a little bit further than what I do with the graphic design stuff, that's where Boxes comes in.
A little escape, isn't it? A little escape from the humdrum day. It's
therapy.
I hope this isn't really therapy. I've seen it. Yeah,
it's like a form of meditation as well. It's kind of like my equivalent of people that go, like, you know, go fishing or play golf. You do forget yourself just for that little amount of time. And then, you know, once you've finished, you've got something to show for it. Sometimes it's an insight into what you're made of, which isn't always necessarily something you want.
And it should be, though, shouldn't it? You know,
I didn't realize I was kind of as cynical as I am, you know, since doing this. So it's definitely, it's kind of nice to hold up a mirror to yourself and I produced that. That's got to be part of me somewhere, you know.
No, we actually love it. What have you got next? Are you doing a series? Is there more of them to come?
Well, I was considering doing a decent, I don't know, 100-page story. I thumbnailed it all out. I'm sitting on that right now because I feel like it's more important to, especially because of my limited time, I get about an hour a day to do this, the format that Boxes is, so lots of short stories, works with my schedule, really. So I'm going to sit on this like longer story for a while. It also means that I can go back and revise it as I go along. But issue 4 is already about 30% of the way through, I want to kind of build up a bit more of not a reputation, but just kind of get my name out there. And for people,
so you don't kickstart, you just finance yourself and put it out, is that right?
Yeah, at the moment it's all me on my own funding it. But if I did do something like this 100-page thing, that's another reason for maybe putting it on hold, is to hopefully gain more of a bit of a fan base that would actually help you with the Kickstarter, because I don't think I'm in a position where I will get enough people basically to to fund it just yet.
I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. So where can people find it online, or where can people buy a copy?
So I should know this off by heart, shouldn't I? ToddOliver.bigcartel.com is where you can purchase it, but you can find me online at Todd Oliver on Twitter and Love Todd on Instagram.
Brilliant. Nice one. Thank you, mate.
Cool. Cheers.
Wow, wasn't that lovely? Nice to
see.
Yeah,
I was a bit shouty because it's quite loud in there and they had a DJ, and because I'm old, I don't like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
you're like, this isn't a discotheque.
Yeah, exactly. Can you turn the music down in this restaurant, please? That sort of thing. Yeah.
That's a nice idea when you got someone like there kind of ushering people towards books they think they like. I think that's a really nice touch.
Yeah, I think so. And then people were forever sort of, everything all right, you know, it's like that. How are you doing? And it was sort of not pressure, not, you know, sell. It was just, you know, friendly. Yeah, but it was difficult to get around. I'd say Saturday, it was like the old days of a comic convention. You were sort of fighting your way around, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went to the pub.
So, like in a comics village thing, back to that subject, if there was a kind of place where everyone could drop off a kind of a proof edition, like for people to like go up and they could look for all these comics on the shelves of the people there and not have the pressure of having to look at one in front of the person you're potentially buying it off.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting social experiment. If you just took all the comics from the small presses at a comic convention and put them on one table, and the small presses didn't have to stand there and sell them, I wonder what would sell more and what would sell less. You know, it's sort of interesting experiment, isn't it?
Yeah, for sort of the how it would do on its own in the wild, as it were.
Yeah, without the creepy stroke nice pressure of someone trying to sell it to you.
Creepy. Definitely. Oh,
I may have had a conversation with Nick Prolix about that this week. I can't divulge anything at all.
It's also touching on last week's show. There's kind of a lot of opinions that we have, and we're going to have to revisit it with the guests we had on because there's so much to cover.
Yeah.
And I think we only scratched the surface with it. But we'd learned a lot from that show. So
it's only got a lot of dialogue going, didn't it? Which is the important thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that kind of effort of trying to move things forward and move together as one, as it were. I think that's, like you said, I'm not sure if unionizing is the idea, is a potentially a good idea, but
yeah,
definitely a more coordinated effort.
Yeah, and I think what you said, Dylan, is right. I think you're let down by your weakest link if you do that, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people I personally don't like their comics. It's only a personal thing. I don't really want to be associated with them.
That's fair enough.
But, we'll see.
Yeah, we can't like everything, can we?
Yeah, exactly. Of course not. Yeah, we've only got our tastes.
Yeah, and also the comics aren't necessarily a representation of how you feel about a person as well. Does that make sense?
No. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Especially when I hate everyone.
Yeah, we do. We all hate everyone, don't we? We're the most antisocial. Yes. So last week sparked a lot of debate, which was great.
Yeah.
We also, when it came to last week's show, we asked for some questions. The conversation just went off on one, and I didn't get a chance. We just ran out of time and didn't get a chance. There was so much more we could have talked about. So we just ran out of time, which is why we need to revisit it. But some of the questions. I'm carrying over because they're sort of more general. Yeah, and we've also got some new ones that people have asked this week. So,
haven't we? One about a banana.
It is about a food stuff, but just
that's right. Yeah,
hold your horses, and I'm looking forward to both of your guys' answers to that one. before we start, let's start with a sensible one, shall we?
Yeah.
Now. Bryony Evans asked us, first time asking a question actually, said, how do you hype yourself up for a page? Also, what's your setup? Do you listen to music, podcasts, or silence when you work? I know that's something that we've talked about a couple of times. I know Tony listens to silence all the time, don't you?
I like that Larry David quote where sometimes he sits in his garden and he pretends he's deaf, and he says, it's not too bad, actually. And sometimes I do that when, you know, I'm surrounded by people I don't really like that much. I sort of pretend I'm deaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite pleasant.
When it comes to, like, drawing pages, I used to always be just sort of soundtracks and music. Now sometimes I will just have a laptop on in the background, just a TV show. I'll just sort of kind of binge watch something, but not in the sense that I'm concentrating on it. It's more background noise.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So that's when you're drawing only,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because if I'm writing, I certainly can't listen to anything with lyrics. I like to listen to music, and it's always soundtracks or, you know, trailer music or anything like that that will be in the theme of what I'm working on. Like if I'm writing a horror story, I'm not going to be listening to something that's crunchy and like sounds like gunshots going off. Do you know what I mean? It has to sort of inspire
me. It frightens you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it frightens me. And I don't want to write when I'm sitting in a pile of my own shit. We've all done it, but I don't want to. Not again.
I told you the story about my friend Squirrel, didn't I?
No.
He was driving. He was driving down the motorway, and he needed to do a number two.
Yeah.
And he thought, "Oh, I'll go." He says, "Oh, there's a service. Is either 1 mile ahead or 16 miles ahead." And he thought, "I'll make the one at 16 miles ahead." Drove past the first set of services, and then got stuck in a traffic jam.
Oh dear!
And he said, "I just had to do it."
Oh God. Yeah, it's kind of when the traffic starts stopping, it's like, oh shit.
The thing is, was he that casual about it? Because
fairly casual. He's quite a dirty boy. So
if it was any of us, we would be like, oh god, I'm gonna have to, aren't I? Whereas you described it,
yeah.
Well, I'm just gonna have to, aren't I?
Just gonna have to.
just did it.
What's some just radio for
a couple of hours?
Yeah.
What's some radio for? Oh, it's the Archers.
This very perfunctory.
just puts really loud metal on and just does it like a sort of Anakin.
What did the other people in the car think? No,
his mum was never given a lift back from the airport. I hated it. He said he stank all the way home.
If you go and like just hang your ass out the door while you're doing 50 down the M1 and let it shoot.
I had it once on a train, so I drew a face on my ass and stuck it out the window. But then we pulled into a train station and the man offered me a drunk bloke offered me a chip.
Is it also terrible if someone recognised you?
Yeah.
You alright, Tone?
Look, mummy, that hairy man's being sick out the window.
Oh,
this went off in all the wrong directions, the answer to that question.
Yeah. I know.
Was to a lady. I feel bad now.
I know.
Sorry, Bryony.
Art-wise, I just kind of very just like a function, get sit down and get drawing or whatever they're doing on the computer. Yeah, but definitely with the writing, you have to be in a different headspace, I find.
Yeah.
I do that thing with the walking and then emailing stuff to myself.
Yeah.
When I'm on the computer and in front of the Word doc or whatever, it's just a matter of assembling it all together, and it's pretty much there. But like, yeah, I have to kind of walk or think about stuff as opposed to maybe like you, Vince, have music on. I can't just sit there and say, right, let's start creating stuff.
When you've got a really daunting page coming up, because I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of artists out there who've written a script, and when they're writing the script, they think, this is going to be amazing, and then they realise what they've got to draw, and they think, what an idiot, why have you done that? So when you've got a difficult page that you've set up for yourself, how do you, you know it's coming, how do you sort of inspire yourself to just get into it?
I just do it. I it's hard to kind of explain. There was a fantastic, I can't remember the name of the creator, talking on Twitter earlier in the week, but if you've got like a big page that's kind of complicated and it's multiple frame, pull out one frame and like that would make that your centerpiece and have all the other ones kind of relatively small. Like say if it's heavy dialogue, have one that's kind of like a big standout one and the rest of them small panels.
Okay, I see. Talking. Yeah.
To try and give everything equal weight, it doesn't work in those kind of things. I've certainly fallen foul for that many times.
Mm.
On dialogue heavy pages.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, that is, because you start worrying about, oh, what angle should I do this from, and what should we do in this one, and but if you've got that, then you can almost just have a mouth saying something in some of it.
Yeah,
if you're setting the scene for that. Yeah,
I think the page shown was like, you know, like when you have one character in a panel and essentially they don't move, it's just their kind of mouth might make different shapes, and it was them talking. And to be fair, when it's a dialogue page, I'm not too fussed like that. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about when when you hit a wall, though, certainly when it comes to script writing, you know, you kind of, you're going at a nice flow, but then we've all had it probably where you've just hit a point and you can't think of how to progress it. Do you take a step back and then come at it later, or do you just keep smashing your head against that brick wall? Tony, how do you, have you had that much in terms of like...
It's interesting, you know, because I was chatting to Stuart actually about this in the pub the other day, and we were saying that writing isn't done when you're sitting there typing. Writing is, for me anyway, is done when I'm on the train and something will occur to me and I'll write a couple of pages in a notebook and I'll have those ideas down. And then when I come to actually write the script out, I've got a notebook full of, you know, lines of dialogue that have occurred to me, or words, or, you know, scenes, or, you know, things that I can use. So when I'm actually typing it, it's worked out before I type it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I break down, I'll have it's all a bit spreadsheety, but in a sort of notebook form, I break down pages and then I break down parts and I break down pages and I break down panels. And then I kind of know, and it might vary when I come to type it. I might think, well, that doesn't really need that. I'll do this. But it's sort of, so I never, because everything's being done on the move for me almost, I don't have that. And I know I've heard Bendis talk about this, and he says just keep notebooks all the time. Everywhere in his house is a notebook, and he writes something down. So he never has that writer's block. I think you can write through writer's block. I think if you start writing, I think sometimes something will occur to you, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like...
What about you guys?
Done scripts, and then I've got two parts, like the end of the story and the middle, and I'm not sure how they're meeting. I just can't get my head around it. So do the whole thing of just walk away from it. And then maybe like a day later, you just be walking along and suddenly like just the connection will be made. You're like, oh, that's it. And you can, well, I do the email, you write in the notepad. And then that's how it joins together. But essentially when you're sitting down to write it, I've got the bare bones of it as bullet points. And then it's just kind of fleshing it out.
Yeah, that's how I do it, dude. Very, very similar, I think. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. What about you, Vince?
Yeah, it's certainly having a bit of space from it helps sometimes. But I find more with prose stuff. When I've worked on stuff like that, and you get a real rhythm, and then it sort of slows down. You know where C is, and you've done A, but you're not quite sure. When you get to B, it's not quite clear. So you need to step away, come back, and then you power through it. And you can always go back and tidy these things up anyway. So, you know...
I think there's nothing more boring than a book that's the same idea all the way through. Yeah. I like to sort of skip about. I mean, you've seen the scripts for the new thing, and each part is almost a different thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I do like that stuff when there's lots of ideas thrown into the story, and it would explore several, but never like, right, we're going to explore this idea, and this is the whole way through. It might throw in a couple of ideas, but never really... explore it, but another comic could take that idea and go somewhere else with it. I really like kind of rich stories that kind of pepper in stuff.
I'm not a big fan of decompression either. I don't like it. I like write as if you were writing it for a 2000 AD story. You want so much in each 10 pages, you know?
Agreed.
It takes a lot of ideas, and that's why you've got to think about it, because there are you know, it's easy to write two people sitting on a couch talking for 22 pages because, you know, it's just a conversation. But if you've got
couldn't do that. I don't know why. Even when I've, you know, all the stuff that I've sort of laid out, it's more kinetic. Something's got to happen. Do you know what I mean? I don't think I could do like a dialogue book. So, you know, fair play to all those people that can, because it is a real skill, you know.
I guess it's condensed down, like the drama's got to go somewhere. Like character A might have a secret and character B wants to find out what it is or something like that. But if it's literally just two people chatting, you think, well, what's the point of this? Why am I doing this?
Yeah, I mean, a comic that's like, for example, an interview in a police station where you're breaking the guy down can be really captivating, but it has to be done. The events aren't in the punching and the car chase, is the events are in the conversation, aren't they?
But it still has to have that, for want of a better word, the punchline. It has to go towards something. There has to be a payoff.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we've all read something where, you know, you've been reading it for ages and it doesn't seem to go anywhere. There's nothing more frustrating than feeling like you've wasted your time.
Do you know what you get that a lot in is the second issues. I'm finding that in second issues at the moment. Some first issues going like incredibly strong. Yeah. You think this is brilliant, and then the second issue you go, oh, okay.
It's treading water, isn't it, really? Until,
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
One series of books that does that well, probably everyone rather rise at this, is the Game of Thrones Fire and Ice series. I mean, there's hardly any fighting in that. Mm. I know on the TV you see a lot of it, but in the books there's not a lot at all.
Also, it's in that,
politics and people
talking.
A lot
of the details are spoken about. There are people talking about, oh, you know, did you hear what happened to this person? And they,
exactly.
You know, that's how you find out about the horrible stuff that happens.
And there's like a ramification after a battle or something of what's happened.
Have you read Dune?
Yeah,
Dan.
I have.
I reread it a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
It's such a, you can see it's such an influence on him.
Yeah.
You know, big from time. the different planets, you know, and the different teams,
different houses,
and, you know,
and
yeah.
Because there's all these kind of people, and they've all got their own agendas, and they're trying to keep it hidden from other people, and every character is trying to get something. Yeah. And sometimes
I don't know why it's not more out there, but Jon Snow is Paul Atreides. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, it's very.
He goes
very
out
similar.
with the Freeman stroke. Is it wildlings in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
You know, finds a mate amongst them. You know, it's just.
I mean, that series is made up of a thousand different influences all mashed together, isn't it? And to be honest, he's fairly he doesn't hide it, does he?
Doesn't he? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, certainly the Tolkien influence, I would say.
Yeah,
right. Oh,
he's always been upfront about that.
For a series that's very much about politics and backstabbing and kind of stuff like that, when it kind of seems to be coming towards the end and it's a big fight, kind of like it's kind of not. This is not really in keeping with the rest of the series. I'm talking about the book series as opposed to the TV series because
the
series has to have like showy fights and battles and what have you to keep people interested.
Yeah. The series is better when it's about that rather than all the...
Trouble is, the same with Dune, as Tony was saying, there's inner monologues that characters have, and they tried to tackle it in the film where you hear like the kind of hushed voice of them speaking.
Yeah, I love that about the book. I really do like that.
Translate it.
They're doing another one, aren't they? I think they're having another go at it soon, I think.
Really?
Durajovsky?
I can't remember. I can never pronounce that guy.
Durajovsky, yeah.
It didn't really go anywhere, and I've watched the Dune TV series, which...
Sort of sci-fi series. Yeah, it's...
ambitious.
Yeah, the bloke from Lockstock who plays one of the characters is a little bit can't act.
Yeah. They were sort of saying that they didn't want them to do... like have kung fu on the sand dunes, but essentially that's what they do in the books,
right?
They don't
they
don't really have guns because you got to read the book. But essentially, it's all about being.
Yeah, I'd recommend it, Vince. Yeah. Really, yeah.
Oh, right.
I think you'd like it, mate. It's one of the best science fiction books ever, if not one of the best books ever. You know, I love it to death. Yeah. Okay, and there's a great Sienkiewicz adaptation of it, which is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah,
absolutely gorgeous. Yeah,
he posted up something about that recently, didn't he? I think some art.
Yeah, he did actually. Mm. Yeah, I think I retweeted it actually. Yeah, gorgeous stuff. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and that's Baron Harkonnen. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, that's probably where I saw it. Actually, not that I'm stalking you, Tony. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I was talking about books. You were rereading Nightbreed.
Yes. Well, I watched the movie and I reread Cabal about a year ago. Yeah, yeah.
I see. I loved that book and I really liked the film. I felt the film kind of could have done stuff differently, but I really loved it for what it was. It always feels like that is just ripe for a TV series.
Oh god, yeah.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, and the comic, mate, I've just started. I'm about four issues into the comic. A brilliant comic, absolutely brilliant. It's almost like an origin story of all the creatures, now they get together and stuff, but really well drawn, really well written. Yeah, great stuff. I think it's Boom put it out, I think it was.
Yeah, very good. Oh, I love that. Cronenberg's great in that film.
Oh, Cronenberg is so good in that. So good. There's a bit in it where he goes in a house and kills the family, and it's like fucking horrible. And you think, oh my god. And there's a kid hiding upstairs, and you think, oh, he'll leave. You know, typical sort of, you know, movies are like at the moment. They would never kill the kid, would they? No. And he just walks upstairs to kill the kid.
Yeah.
You think, hey, isn't this a nasty film?
It's really horrid. That button face is really something else. Great design in that.
Yeah.
Ah, lovely. Good. Anyway, right, next question. The lovely Matt Strott has got in touch with us. He says, I want to hear about the one that got away. Now, he's talking about comics here. He's talking about the series...
Not the victims of my serial killing.
Tying into Nightbreed.
None of them got away.
Now, he wants to know, the series that was cut too short, never got a chance, underrated, etc., or creators you wish were still working?
Oh, okay.
That's a really difficult one for me.
Yeah.
Tough.
I genuinely think there's a lot of creators who would still be doing well in mainstream Marvel and DC. I think I know he's quite difficult, but I'd love to see Byrne back on a Marvel or DC book.
Mm.
I know he does his own thing pretty much now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's a bit of a crazy horse, isn't he?
Like grumpy.
He is a little bit, I think. Yeah, quite grumpy. Mm. Yeah. I'd like to see Doug Mensch. I'd like to see Marv Wolfman. You know, I'd like to see Don McGregor. All these sort of people back on Marvel and DC books. I think they're you've almost got like versions of them currently working at Marvel and DC. Mm. You know, and I'd like to see them back. You know, great ideas, and they're still pushing stuff out there. I mean, I think, is it Charles Vest won a book award this week for one of his art books? I'd love to see him do something.
Nice one. Yeah.
I'd
love to see Darrow do more comic stuff.
Yeah, but, I think is Shaolin Cowboy back out again? I think it's another series, isn't it? It's issue 3 is out now. Yeah. Yeah, he's fucking nuts. He's also like the nicest bloke in the world. Yeah, he's like a fucking genius. But I know what you mean. And I know Starlin dips in and out a bit, but I'd love to see Starlin get his due. When you think of all the characters he's had a hand in creating, you know, from Warlock through to Guardians through to Captain Marvel and all these sort of characters. I know he didn't create them all, but he certainly developed a lot of them all. You know,
yeah.
I'd like to see him back, definitely.
What about
Arthur Adams?
Oh god, yeah.
Who, sorry?
Yeah, Arthur Adams.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see him occasionally still? Don't you?
Yeah. He does more like kind of pin-ups and stuff, as opposed to kind of.
And a lot of these guys don't seem to keep a regular. Alan Davis doesn't. I know he did. Was it Captain Britain and the Defenders? He did during the Battleworld thing.
Mm.
But have I seen him? I might have seen him on something since. But yeah, he never seems to. And like a nice long run of people on certain books would be good as well. I think these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about a series that was cut too short? What comics out there? Because of the nature of sales, had their legs taken out from under them. I know it's hard for me to think of one off the top of my head, because a lot of the series that I think, oh, you know, I love this series, but they still managed to wind it up well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Superior Foes of Spider-Man, or, you know, Avengers Academy and things like that. You know, not Avengers Academy.
Yeah.
Although that may be one, actually. But I was thinking, oh, God. I can't believe it now. It's one of my favourite books, and I can't remember the flipping title.
So I go with one. What do you think of one?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to say, in fact, it's a book that I reread last week for the mail out we did around the Cockney Kung Fu thing, and that's Richard Dragon. I think Richard Dragon was a real possibility for DC. I think it had, is it Scott McDaniel? I'm blanking on his name. Did Nightwing.
Yes.
On the art. And Chuck Dixon was writing it, and he had real possibilities, and it was this real sort of brutal kung fu, you know, hard kung fu book. And Nightwing appears in one of the episodes, and, you know, the sort of thing, one of the issues. But I think it had real possibilities, and it only lasted 12 issues. I know his original series only lasted, I think, 18.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think, like, there's room for a kung fu book. I don't know why there's not one.
UFC stuff really big, you would have thought.
Yeah.
That crowd into that. I don't know if there's a crossover there, but
yeah, might be right. Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of people involved in who like wrestling and like comic books.
Yeah, and I know on my read pile I've got Omega Men by Tom King, which apparently is brilliant. Everyone's saying that this is I think the series was almost kept alive for the last couple of issues to finish it off.
Yeah, that was one that was cancelled, and then fan outcry gave it a couple more issues, didn't it?
Yeah, And the other one is, I think it's one you've read, Vince, as well, is The Vision.
Yes.
Still be a comic. It should still be a comic now. So good.
Is that finished?
A lot of people have said that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, finished. Yeah, 3 or 4 months ago. Yeah, because I know you trade read it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah, such a good book. But, you know, such is the nature of things. Oh, although that this does tie into something I read a month or two ago when it came to, I think it was that Black Panther one, wasn't it? Or that one on issue 2, they announced that they were cancelling it.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Someone was complaining that essentially they do like a couple of, this is Marvel, and I don't know how true this is, they do a couple of issues, and when it's not working, they just basically reboot it back to one, tweak some stuff, and then set it on its course again.
Yeah.
Is that something that's happening?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I think I think also a lot of comics have been brought alive again by TV series. We're getting a Black Lightning TV series.
Yeah.
I mean, how long did the original Black Lightning comic last? Virtually less than 6 months, I think.
Mm. I quite like the trailer for that TV series as well. I thought that was
good. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, yeah, he was great in The Outsiders as well. He was a great character in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, I like the way his mask and also gave him a big head of hair. That was part of his disguise.
Yeah. Which is it. It can possibly be that guy because he's got hair and that dude's bald.
Yeah. It's a little bit better than a quiff, isn't it? And a pair of glasses.
Yeah. 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 I mean, at the moment, sadly, I think, Matt, is the answer is that the comics are just littered with the bodies of dead comics, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, that have been tried for a bit and then just crashed and burned again. Which is sad, really.
I think, in some ways, when you're announcing, certainly for a bigger company, when you're announcing a new series, you should do away with mentioning ongoing. You know when they sort of say issue one of a new ongoing series starring whatever character, and they're always the ones that just die, like have six issues. Whereas if it only gets six issues, you've got a nice, you know, a mini. You don't have, you know, I'm not saying call them minis or whatever, but announcing it as ongoing and then it gets cancelled shortly afterwards, I think that raises a lot of heckles for a lot of people.
Do you think they're worth moving to this mini series? Like, here's an arc of the character.
Oh, what, like, you mean like the Hellboy BPRD model? Yeah. Where they, you know, I know they're running through now, aren't they? But yeah, there is that. I know the other one I've got to mention is Minimum Wage, which adopted that model and isn't now coming back. I don't know. I think it's a good way to do it because you're going to get a full story, don't you?
Yeah. I just wonder the reticence of people say, like, right, we're all on board on issue one, and by the time you get to five, some of the audience has dropped off. Yeah. Not many people want to jump in because it's on issue five already. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This wasn't a problem back in the day because when I started picking up a copy of Spider-Man, it was like 386. So you're straight in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But DC have picked up the numbering on some of their books, haven't they, again?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, so we'll get an issue 1000 or something, or, you know. Does it hurt 2000 AD? I don't know. They're whatever they're at now, you know. 2030, or whatever it is, I think.
Yeah.
Is it hurting their sales? But then again, I suppose that you can dip into Dread anywhere, can't you?
Yeah.
You know?
They're an anthology in as much that you jump into a 2000 AD, you might be in part two of one story, but part one would just be kicking off in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
It's not too bad to jump forward backwards 2000 AD a couple of issues just to kind of finish off a story you've liked.
You're kind of in there. Yeah. I think you're right. And I think because the market has changed over the last, you know, 10, 15 years due to manga being more, you know, dominant in the sales market, especially, people often expect a long run, you know, sometimes. Yeah. So some of these manga books, they're like 50 volumes, aren't they, and stuff, you know?
Oh, God,
well, that's the kind of trouble. Like, they kind of came out, and then there was the massive backlog already to kind of people to get started on, and then they're churning them out at fucking rate of knots.
That was one of the things. Berserk. Dan very kindly gave me the first two volumes of that.
Oh, okay.
And I opened up that, and then I thought, oh, volume one, volume two, this is awesome stuff. And then you got this long list of, like, it's up to how many volumes?
I think it's plus 50.
You get a lot of bang for your buck with those books, I'll tell you.
Well, I'm hoping that's what's happening, because we are, with the dawn of digital, we're seeing a lot more Euro books coming our way, aren't we?
Yeah.
And, like, I know you got 13 recently. You got the first volume, didn't you, Vince?
Yes.
And that's up to quite a few, and it's got the spin-off series. And it's nice that they can't quite deal with a marketing strategy to stick them out as, you know, print copies in this country a lot of the time for a lot of the books, but you'll get them on the digital platforms, which I think is great.
Yeah.
There's so many books from Europe that I just can't wait to read, and all we're waiting for them is the translation.
Yeah. And seriously, folks, if you buy your comics digitally, wherever you get them from, just keep an eye out, because I know I get mine on Comixology each week, and every week there will be a sale. Will either be from Humanoids, it will be from Europe Comics. You know, keep an eye out for those, because you'll find some absolute gems on there.
You know? I jumped on that Humanoids sale this week, and got a couple of things. which I can't wait to read.
That was a science fiction sale, wasn't it, this week?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was. They have got so many good books. Have you been through their back catalogue on there as well? Oh my god, there's some great stuff. Yeah. There's some great Western books,
Well, I read the first two volumes of Carthago.
Did you enjoy it?
Sweet mother of biscuity Christ. That is... Do you know what I mean?
I don't know anything about this.
Just giant shark and lots of business inside, some dodgy businessman and all of that. That's the very basic way of putting it, isn't it, Tony? There's lots of ecological and political things going
on. But just so fucking beautiful. Oh my god,
it's unbelievable. It's seriously unbelievable, Dan. Like I got the first two volumes, and for anyone out there, there's five volumes and that's the complete story, isn't it? Like all of them are out
there. Yeah, and then it goes to there is a spin-off by something, Carthago Adventures or something. I haven't seen that.
And I read the first two volumes and I had to stop myself. I literally had to stop myself to think, right, actually I'm going to order the print version, the collection of all of them. You know, I want to read like this. I was seriously loving it.
But that's what I said to you, wasn't it? I said I kept dipping back into it because then I thought, no, I'm going on holiday soon. I need to save this for the holiday.
Yeah.
But you've got to keep turning the page on that book, though, haven't you?
The most amazing megalodon. Just just so good, so good.
Did you see the cover to volume 5?
Yes, that's the one. That's the person on like the float or something like
the
that.
Raft,
the raft with the shark underneath. Oh, just sweet mother.
I sent it to Jason Wood of 11 O'Clock Comics, and he just came back with "Sweet Jesus" and ordered it straight away as well. Beautiful stuff. Probably my book of the year so far. I've got to be honest with you.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Just beautiful.
And I will say that like it's great. In every aspect, like the story is genuinely enthralling. It is. There's good characters in it. That's what most impressed me. Because you could quite easily just make, it's a giant shark story, but that will only go so far.
Oh, no, so much. Yeah. It's a conspiracy story. That guy lives up in the Carpathian Mountains. And, and you've got the family of scientists and this sort of secret organisation and environmental sort of activists. And really clever. Proper clever adult comics. Yeah. That's France. France and Europe does it so well, don't they? I think I said to you, if this was an image book, people would be fucking losing their minds on it.
I mean, just European comics. We're going to be talking a lot more about that.
We've got that coming up, haven't we?
Fairly soon. Yeah. There's going to be a focus on it. Right, so I just got all flustered then talking about that book, Tony.
Me too.
Right, okay. Next question.
Right.
Alan Henderson, how many uses for a cucumber can you think of? I'm not
Henderson,
gonna
you dirty boy.
I'm not going to take this into dirty territory. I'm just going to say this. I can think of one use, and that's to burn it, because cucumbers are shit. They're just a pointless bag of green water.
I like cucumbers.
They ruin every sandwich they touch. I know what you're thinking, folks. This is the most passionate that I've been in weeks. But that's how much I hate cucumbers. They're bullshit. Bullshit.
Do you not like cucumbers?
They're all right.
It's weird. Like, if someone was making a sandwich, he goes, I didn't stick a bit of cucumber in, it's fine. Yeah, okay. But you didn't ever sit around and think, oh, yeah, I really fancy some cucumber. No. You know what I mean? It's kind of...
Oh, yes. Yes, you do.
No. I don't.
No.
So Vince hates them. I'm indifferent. And Tony loves them.
Pointless.
That's the... hot take.
You see, folks, on this show, that there's, you know, we've all got our individual tastes, and this is just a perfect example of it, of how we give you a little bit of everything. But cucumbers are bull.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say. Right, next question. JP Jordan. He says, typically, how long does it take each of you to script? Now I've never timed myself, but I think it totally all depends on the project, really, doesn't it? I know sometimes, like with a Red Mask issue, even though I've had it all planned out, it'll take me, I don't know, I don't do it solidly with those scripts. But when
mine's
I've worked
bumps, easy.
But you're working ahead of yourself though, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah, I am.
So
but,
it does take me a little while. I think sometimes it flows fairly quickly,
I type in 5-page sections. Do you aim to do so many pages out of script, or do you?
I like to. Sometimes I have like really productive bursts where I'll almost get like 10 pages, and this is certainly it's probably the more action orientated pages. You know, but if I'm writing for someone else, it'll be more descriptive. But sometimes I'll get 10 pages done, and then it'll stop because I don't know where to go. but it's interesting. What about you, Tony? So you do the five page bursts, but just
I
say
try
you...
and do it in 5-page bursts. I've usually got 20 pages laid out.
Yeah,
and then I do it. I type it out in 5-page bursts. I just find that. I don't know, really. I just find I'd like to keep the energy up, and then I'll do something else, or I'll write a review or read a comic or something, and then I'll go back and write another 5 pages, I suppose. I just like that, just to keep that sort of energy up. Plus, I think you need to refresh phases and phrases you're using and dialogue and stuff like that sometimes.
Yeah.
I think if you're continuously typing, things come back. You know, we've all got, you know, it's easy, you know, you've got the thesaurus next to you or on the computer to look up different kinds of words for different kinds of things. And I think if you start looking that up, then I think, right, I need to have like a little walk away.
Yeah.
You know.
I know certainly with the Red Mask issues, because I do the mock-up, so I know how the whole issue is sort of laid out. I'll script the dialogue fairly quickly from that. And if I'm having difficulty with a page, like certainly some of the more exposition-y sort of pages, I'll write down kind of what happens and maybe a very vague, you know, one line, two line to develop further, and then I'll move on to the next page. Rather than that page holding it up, I know what's, you know, I just keep with the flow.
Okay, because I'm always careful about skipping a page because I don't always keep...
Yeah.
I'm not that strong about keeping to things.
I never leave a page blank. Okay. I always sort of write down what's happening on the page, but just what people are saying, the dialogue. If it's not right in my head, if nothing's inspiring me, I'll still get the basics down and then move on and then come back to it.
When you two are writing scripts for other people, do you worry about putting like 7 panels on a page or stuff like that? I sometimes worry that I'm giving him or her a bit too much of a hard time, you know. So I tend to, I don't often go above 6 panels on a page, really.
Yeah, I try not to.
I think it's fine as long as you're not giving them 9 panels every page. If a page has to be 9 panels, it has to be 9 panels, and then other page might be 4 or 3 or whatever. But if you're jamming every single page with panel after panel, you're not doing something right. It's kind of. I think the comic book you're making is too much close to a kind of literary book as opposed to a comic, and you need to kind of refine.
Also, with an action sort of page, just say you've got like 2 pages of a fight scene, you don't need 9 panels for that, unless it was, you know, there's a certain design way that you want close-ups of all like the individual fist hits or something like that. I prefer to have like more like shorter, you know, just punchier focus on the scenes rather than just really sort of eke it out.
Kind of script wise, if I was going to write for someone else, I'd say, right, character A and villain X fight on this page. Villain X gets the upper hand by the end of it, and then sort of say you can fill in what you want here, unless there's any kind of press.
Quite loose, yeah.
Yeah, unless there was a pressing thing like, oh, yes, to gouge his eye out or something like that, just let him go for it.
That's almost quite a Marvel style, isn't it? Isn't that what the Marvel style was? When they sort of said, right, this happens on these pages, and then when they get the art back, then they fill in the words, wouldn't they, I think? Isn't that what Marvel style was?
I think so. He was kind of writing very loose and saying, like, whoever would go in afterwards and fill in the text, the speech and stuff. But I think, like, you should play to the artist's strengths in that regard.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
They're doing the drawing, and they know the best way to kind of put the page together, and just let them do it.
It's also down to the relationship to someone, if you know who's doing it as well.
Exactly.
You know? I know we talked to Owen about writing for the unknown artist, and I think I include more if I don't know who's going to end up drawing it. Plus, I like to get ideas down on a page sometimes if I do have a vision for the fight. You know, I wrote a fight recently. It's just where someone's trying to punch someone and they're blocking. So I actually put out, you know, I laid out block to this, block to that, block to that, you know, so it gives it that, you know, so they know what they're doing. Just don't, you know, I suppose different themes appear in different action sequences, don't they? Mm. You know.
So, okay. I was going to bring up the subject of character voices and having. Sometimes I read my stuff back and think this feels like all the same people talking and moving the story forward. How do you guys go about giving characters a specific voice, like this one's very much that and that one's very much like that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wrote about this today, actually, funny enough, in an essay for that mail out I do. And as you two well know, there's an actress. Well, there's two people I've based a character on. And once I've got that fixed in my head, that image, even before it's drawn, I find it easier to talk about how they'd react. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I know the facial acting. So I don't know if you base one of your characters on Katharine Hepburn, that is an analog, isn't it? That is a character that you know. So you know that they'll do this or they'll look that way. And you know, sometimes, or if I, you know, I'm not saying like physically you have to base them on it, but certainly when you're designing a personality, you can. That's how I did it a bit, you know. So you've got like you're basing a certain character on a general, for example. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
I sort of find it helps with the dialogue as well, so I know what their voice sounds like. I know how they react, and I know. But I hate it when people say, "Oh, the character took over while I was writing," you know. But I think kind of that's what they mean by that, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I understand.
I know certainly characters find their voices as you're writing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm for all intents and purposes writing a teen book for myself, and each of them, as it's gone on, have developed. And
it's got cucumbers in it.
It's the cucumber squad, and they're fucking useless.
Well, that's why I feel like you need to have your characters very much worked out before. The more you can do that, the better. Yeah. So you hit the ground running, as opposed to like, oh, now I know five issue in that this guy is like this.
And also, never betray the voice that you've given a character. You know, you never want anyone to point out, why is this character doing this? That's so against what they've been doing and everything else. Do you know what I mean? I think you have to be very true to the characters that you create.
Hmm. Do you ever use real dialogue as dialogue for your characters?
There's a lot of the stuff that certainly Doug in the Red Mask, he's just saying like slang in some way, or you know.
Yeah, so it's sort of like stuff you've heard on the bus or something like that.
Or have some of that, you mother. You know, that kind of thing. Which isn't necessarily what you hear normally, but I don't know. I guess that's me imparting some of the nonsense that I speak on a daily basis onto a character.
Yeah, God forgive me if they ever did a comic on what we fucking say. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
But with that in mind, he may talk like that, but no one else does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not like they've all got the same sort of dialogue or language. It's very specifically, he's going to talk like that and be quite quippy, but not everyone else is. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's just me personally. What about you, Dan? Have you actually heard, either of you, have you heard someone say something just in your day-to-day life and just thought, I'm putting that in a script?
It's more.
I know. Got me.
Go on, no, sorry, go on.
I'll say I have, and it's something I remember when I sent you a script over, Vince, you said, oh, I'm not sure about that line. Do you remember it's had included the C word in it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but that came from a phrase that it was used in a group of friends I was in, you know. In South London, and it was sort of specific, almost, I don't want to give it away, but it was specific to that group.
Yeah.
And I just felt that ring of truth, and I know it's quite strong, but it goes somewhere later on, if that makes sense.
And, but also, the way you're using it, even though it is within that group, it works beyond. It's not just an inside joke. I think for a lot of comics, if you're doing a joke that 99% of people reading it aren't going to get, why are you putting it in there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think those kind of moments of authentic language and speech making their way in there, it kind of makes it, it sells it as real, because rather than hearing what maybe the reader expect to hear, it's something that they don't, and it's real, and it gives it maybe a bit more energy than something just off the top of your head.
Yeah, I like those sort of multiple word balloons that, you know, you have two characters talking and you have almost like a staircase of word balloons.
Yeah.
As that, you know, because not everyone says everything they want to say in one sentence.
No.
You know, someone says something between it, and like we do, when we say something, someone goes, oh yeah. You know, that's the real world, isn't it? You know, that's what happens.
Yeah, yeah. You don't see too many of those, sort of, like you say, the staircase sort of word balloons. Right? You don't see that so much anymore.
If I'm right for myself...
Yeah, I was looking at a page of...
So I try and break it up into multiple word balloons just to kind of give it a bit of pacing space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never...
I think you see it in Powers. I was looking at a Powers page the other day, and they're the masters of it in that, and Oeming and Bendis do it a lot in that book. Mm. You know, I kind of like it.
I remember there was one rule that I've sort of steadfast to. I remember sending a script to Lizzie Boyle of Disconnected Spring.
Right.
Just sort of, this was back in the day, just have a look at this, see what you think. And some of it was quite wordy. And she sort of said, well, you know, when it comes to word balloons, try not to have any more than 25 words to an individual word balloon. You can have a longer sort of bit of speech, but the actual balloon itself should hold no more than that. So, and I've steadfast to that, and because of that, the rhythm helps. It's better. I know some, you know, if you've got a word balloon that's absolutely just jam packed with words, like a paragraph, it's a bit in your face. It's something I did notice in some of the European comics. Certainly, when with the translation, like Carthago, back to that, there are a couple of word balloons that are absolutely rammed with dialogue. On that.
Yeah, I think sometimes those Euro comics suffer a bit from the translations.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think there's occasionally in the Leo stuff that I spoke about last year, you get a stiffness to the dialogue because the translation isn't. You've got to be a good writer to write naturalistic dialogue, and a translator doesn't feel that as well, and probably doesn't think that they can change bits to make it more naturalistic. You know,
it's a very difficult job that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think like you say, I completely agree around that 25 words. I think it is a good yardstick.
Yeah.
But I think occasionally you can break it. I think it's a free form art form, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
I think if you're right, and I know that's something that a lot of big company writers agree with. Did it come out in that Peter David book, or is it the Alan Moore book, or whatever it was? I can't remember now, but someone quoted it. I think that's where it comes from. But I think if you've got a character who wants to stand there and it works for that page where they give a long, you know, they give a long diatribe, for example, and I think it's worth a go sometimes.
Yeah.
But people do have low attention spans, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, so I think they see a big page of text, they go, oh, I'll just move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck the story.
Yeah.
Just
give this page.
Right. Another question from Reach Illustration. Good lad.
I think we're seeing him at London, aren't we? He's going to be at London, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
Indeed.
Yeah,
Lord knows how many people are going to be there. It's going to be a cracking weekend.
He's
asked, how can you get more prolific at making comics? Is it just all trial and error and experience, or are there any crafty tips?
Pardon me. I think he gives us credit.
I am no authority.
I've got a fucking clue. Yeah, I was going to ask him. I see the art he puts up on Instagram. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I just think you just got to make yourself busy. I mean, is that the answer? It's same as any job. You got to go round and you got to see people and say, are you looking for any writing gigs? Or, you know, I've started recently. I don't know why. It's just sort of started doing a little series of introductions to people's trade paperbacks and stuff, and I like that, and that is a separate discipline, but it does get my name on books, you know. There's all sorts of things. Covers, for example, I suspect he could probably do some brilliant covers. I'd love to see some covers done by him, you know.
I would say don't wait for people to come to you. Don't wait. Approach people, because you can be a fantastic artist, and I've seen people on Twitter and they've said, oh, I don't seem to be getting any commissions. And it's like, well, you never tell any people that you're doing them. If someone's constantly doing absolutely amazing artwork, I always think, okay, they're busy, they've got stuff, whatever, they're doing stuff, so you maybe not approach them. But if you're generally putting it out there, going to people saying, oh, I want to do a bit of work for you, blah 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 blah, you're kind of trying to get out there and make the first step. I think trying to sit back and let it come to you, and not that I'm accusing you or anyone of doing that, but put the feelers out there at least. That's the, a good start.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think... I know certainly you do it, Dan. I know you, Vince, as well. You do sort of suggest to people you do covers for them and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a great way. I know a lot of mainstream artists are doing some... That you see them do the sequentials and you see some... to be fair, the best example of this I've probably seen in about fucking 55 years. Well, did you see Mark Lambo's?
That's fantastic.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Fucking so hell.
Good. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I almost did a squirrel.
So just explain to the listeners what Mark, our friend Mark Lambo, did.
Mark's done a Old Man Logan, who is, you know, and the Logan's back, Wolverine's back in the Marvel Universe as an old man. And he's done a homage to Barry Windsor Smith Wolverine cover, isn't he?
A classic cover.
Wolverine piece. Mm. Yeah, it's fucking beautiful. Yeah. Go to, is it monkey underscore Mark, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head. Go to his Twitter page, and he's done a sort of transition between the two covers.
Yeah.
As a sort
it's
of
like an fucking... anime gif. They kind of between the two. It's really well done.
Is that the sort of thing? I mean, I don't know how obviously it works legally or rights issues or something. If you do a cover like that, like Mark's done, how would he like? That would be an amazing print just on its own. If he wanted to do that, how would he go about it? You know, would they give him permission?
Well, if you wanted to sell it at a convention, for example, I know this. Probably something Mark. I don't want to preempt anything Mark does for New York, but I know he's got into New York, and we're waiting out. But I personally would be pushing him to do that as a print. I'd fucking buy 10 of them.
Yeah.
But I think I only know this through Mark because of Mark being the gent that he is, goes to Marvel and goes to Dynamite and goes to DC and says, "Do you mind if I do a print?"
Hmm.
I think that's how it works,
and that's how it should work. They normally, you know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, you have to be professional. It's also their IP. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And he'd been paid by them to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's only right.
Yeah. Oh, such a good piece, though. Such a good
piece. I'd want their okay before doing that.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Shall we have one more question?
Yeah.
I'm genuinely interested in this. Genuinely interested in this. Ken Reynolds.
No. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Ken Reynolds asked, he's also genuinely interested about budgets on purchasing comics without being nosy, and how you split between digital and print. He also says, "I'm finding I'm having to read more digital so I can read a wider range."
I had an experience relatively recently. I picked up my pull list in Orbital. I hadn't been down there for a while, and it was like a 50 quid hit. And I was like, fucking hell, that's a lot. It's all just floppies, no trades or anything like that.
But how long was it before you...
I'd been down there for a few months.
Right, so because some people just do that in a week.
Yeah, I don't know, I kind of... Yeah, I would like to spend a lot more on the comics.
I know, but certainly there's a lot of our listeners out there who are the Wednesday Warriors, who have a lot of pull lists and stuff.
Yeah, I am. I'm proud to say I am, because I get excited and I want to go in and read comics. Yeah. And at the moment, there's loads of stuff out there that I'm excited about, and I want to get in there and read it. You will never get it out of me, Ken. I will never tell you. You can torture me all you like.
Yeah.
But I probably spend a ridiculous amount.
He could buy a yacht a week if he didn't.
It's hard because
Bear in mind you've been in the Batcave, Vince. You can see you can see evidence from that how much I've spent over the years. You know.
Yeah.
I guess Ken's in the same boat as me. You got like family on the go and a lot of other priorities. So kind of you got to be careful of bringing home too much
in terms of
paper and the Mises game.
Yeah, he did sort of bring up he's reading a bit more digital because. Print is a lot more expensive. I can see that. My buying habits, people aren't gonna get my numbers out of me, but then again I don't really have a number in my head. And normally on a weekly basis it'll be digital. Purely because I don't get a chance to go to, you know, a big, nice comic book store that often. And then I'll probably splash out more at the cons. know what I mean? If I go to a convention, I think on a weekly basis, yeah, I don't know. All depends on the series you're following, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but whereas Tony's just buying everything. I don't know what I spend a week. It's not a great deal. I will say, even though we do a comic book show, and we're all about making comics and stuff, I don't buy as many comics certainly as I used to. I really don't. I'll take a punt more on a lot of independent and small press stuff.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I look for each week. And sometimes I've had to sacrifice an older series that I might be following to try out a new book. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I can always come back and buy the other issues.
Catch up.
Yeah.
It's like this, I'm definitely moving to trades.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of... that's been pretty much the case. Yeah. I think as soon as Invincible goes... I'd be moving wholly just to get into collections.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's where it goes. Well, apart from small press, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You want to find that new gem of picking up a first issue of someone and say, oh, this is fucking brilliant. And, yeah, carry on collecting the stuff you've been getting off of other creators.
Yeah. Oh, if only we could buy all the comics.
Yeah, I know. It's the same way kind of like going down a comics village and you go in there with so much money, but it can only go so far.
Yeah.
When he's sort of like saying, oh, I'll come back later to someone, it's like, I don't know if I will, because buying so much as it is, it's kind of racking up.
Yeah. So, all depends on your budget, you know.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Or your coke habit, depending on which.
Too much, I think, is the answer.
Yeah.
You
have to break Tony down individually, I think, on that one.
Or as most of us would probably say, if only you knew. How much I spend? I think
that's right. Having admitted how much I spent on original art recently in front of someone, it was a bit embarrassing. Yeah.
Right. One final one that we're hot off the press that we've just got in today. Actually, the guys at True Believers. They say, do you think cons do enough to promote small press at their events, and do you think small press do enough to promote the cons they are at? Oh,
yeah, this is a sticky question, isn't it? And I have to say, this is from Stuart, isn't it?
Yeah.
I actually sent Stuart a message this week saying thanks for everything he's doing, because he does a fucking lot. And he said to me, oh, where's that come from? And I said, well, just because, mate, I notice like all the time you're promoting other people.
Yeah.
Every day he promotes someone new, doesn't he? You see, he does a little spotlight or a Kickstarter spotlight or something like that. And I think there are Nottingham and Leamington and Ice and these people. They do a lot to promote other people. That's kind of their It's not their business; it's their hobby.
I know certainly at Cardiff, which is on in a couple of weeks.
I was going to talk about Cardiff in a minute. Yeah, Izzy does so much. You know.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there could be more done on the people showcasing their stuff there.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think because everyone. Yeah.
Last time we went to London Super Comic Con, like I was actively searching on social media a lot, trying to see like who the other small press people would be there, and most of them just had nothing.
Really?
Online, nothing.
Yeah.
And I was reading like the table list. And, okay, this is what they do. Nothing.
Do you think it's that part of that? We've talked about it before. You know, when you don't have a new book, when you're not launching something at a show, do you think some people can be, you know, don't have the umph, the get up and go to shout about it so much? I notice when someone's launching something, you hear about them nonstop. That's me included. But afterwards, I'll hold my hand up. I don't do it so much. I do shout about the shows I'm going to and retweet them constantly.
Yeah. Well, there's something Dan said from Leamington when he came on the show, didn't he? He said it only takes that extra tap to go from liking a tweet to retweeting it.
Yeah.
It's not much effort, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does help. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely marketing. I know you kind of feel guilty about posting stuff in multiple groups and keeping retweeting the same thing over and over, trying to show people that you're doing this. But we've been over it before, how much life these things have, and it's like 5 to 10 minutes. Yeah. So if someone hasn't seen it in that fucking window, you're sending out again. You're hitting a whole new audience of people. Yeah. I know it can be frustrating to the people you kind of are following you and see the same thing popping up over and over again. And it sometimes can feel like shouting into the bloody void with Twitter. But yeah. I feel like it has to be done.
But there are more annoying things on Twitter these days, as yes. we both know. We all know. So I think I'm not. If someone says I've got a new issue coming out and I see it a couple of times in one day, I don't get that hump at all. Doesn't upset me at all. But if someone says, "Oh, I'm going to Leamington, make sure you come in. Going to Nottingham, wherever it's going to be, Sice," I don't mind that. I think that's great. And often, before I go to one of these events, I'll put a tweet out saying, "Who's about?" I did it before LCAF actually. Yeah. I said, "Who's about? Who's got a new book dropping? Who wants to chat?" I've got to bring in my microphone with me. You know.
Yeah.
That's great. And I know a few people retweeted it. You know, it's good.
It will fuck me off if someone tags me in on a tweet about something they're doing, like, and it's nothing to do with me.
We suffer from that a bit now, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we got like, there's so many contact details to the pod, and if you want to send stuff in to be looked over and discussed, that's fine. But if I don't know you, I'm kind of like, who are you?
Yeah.
And it's like there's about five people in the tweet that I don't know. That it's this kind of this shotgun approach. I think that's got more of a thing to turn people off of it.
Yeah. I got a few recently with it says stuff like, "Are you interested in stuff? Are you interested in this and that?" And I'm thinking, I've written about that about five times on Down the Tubes. I've mentioned it on the podcast about five times. If you're that into, you know, contacting us and you're saying in your message that you're a big fan of the show, you're clearly not because you're not listening to it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh dear. So thank you very much for all your questions, people.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice varied selection.
Yeah, I like the cucumber one. Well done, Henderson, you dirty boy.
Well,
that put me on the back foot.
I wasn't a fan of that. I wasn't a fan of that question. Doesn't take much to put you on the back foot, does it, Dan?
Nah. Usually food related questions.
Oh, okay.
Don't know how to process that. Like food.
Oh dear God!
That was a squirrel incident.
Oh dear God! Oh, this show—it's just gone off the rails, isn't it? But But I tell you what doesn't go off the rails, and that's our sponsors.
Oh no!
Yeah. No, the good guys at Comic House. Thank you very much for their continued support. I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there know a bit more about comic. You know, they know Comic House. And all the good stuff they're doing. They're another group of people that are just doing the good work for small press comics.
Fighting the good fight.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a hard fight. It's getting harder
this week.
Yeah. Congrats to them on their successful Kickstarter for the app, which is going to be amazing.
Think that we were there at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, all these people will be jumping on later on saying what a great idea it was. We were there at the beginning, so fuck you all.
Yeah. Pete and the Comic House guys. Yeah, we knew them before they were famous.
Exactly.
And basically, Comic House was set up as a marketplace and database site where creators can buy and sell their comic books. It costs nothing to list your book, and they'll sell it for you. And I think they only take like 1p commission for every book sold. So publishers and indie creators can list their stuff on the website, and you'll see all kinds of amazing indie titles on there, and a few bigger names as well. I know there's some 2000 AD stuff, if I remember correctly, some IDW stuff.
Yeah.
It's all there. So as well as a plethora, just wanted to use that word, of small press and indie talent, and it's, you know, places like this are great. Because you might not be able to go to these conventions that we talk about, or you might not be able to make it to London Super Comic Con, but there's probably going to be a lot of creators there who will have their books on Comic House. All that, and Comic House are publishing a badass anthology series that Dan Butcher has been in, and I'm also in as well. So, you know, there you go. You got to love it. They're trying to push the boundaries of what small press books can achieve in the modern marketplace. And all more power to them. So go and show them some love and get involved at comichouse.com. There you go. I think
brilliant.
I'll need a snazzy script for that at some point, won't I? I'm just riffing. I'm freestyling like
that's pretty good.
Big Willy style. It was only a matter of time before I said Big Willie Style.
That so doesn't translate, because it was, he did have his album, was it Big Willie Style?
Yeah.
Will Smith.
Yeah.
And kind of so different connotation over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not negative.
No. So then, gents, do we have any shout outs for the lovely listeners?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Go for it.
Yeah. Cardiff, SICE, Cardiff Independent Comics Expo, we just mentioned them, is coming up on the 8th of July. It's at the Cardiff Masonic Hall, which I know you're a member of the Masons, aren't you, Vince?
Yeah.
for the greater good. Anyway.
The old left nipple business.
Is it the left nipple?
Or the right?
Oh, inside effect.
Yeah.
At that is a host of big names and small press. Rufus Dayglow at the other brothers are there, Henry Flint, as well as me, Vince, and Nick Prolix are going to be going along. So I'm staying at Vince's house. I haven't told him yet. So I'm looking forward to that.
We will have we will be launching the Awesome Comics Podcast badges.
Ooh! Oh, we're doing the badges of that one. Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. See how well they go. Yeah, because SICE is... It is an independent comic book expo. You know, they show love to all these small press creators. So, if you love small press, there's a real sexy badge that you can get. But you know,
yeah,
more on that next week.
And you get beaten up down the bus stop wearing it. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll get you beaten up. That's essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you're into it, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And the other one is that by the time you hear this, I will be back in Blighty, but thanks to Pat and Lisa Mills for looking after me in Spain, and much beer was drunk and much comics were talked about, and more from Pat and Lisa soon, hopefully. Lisa, we're trying to get her on the show. We tried to talk her into it after 2008, didn't we? Do you remember?
Yeah.
She wasn't having it. Yeah. But she's like the marketing force behind Pat's book, so go out and buy Be Pure, Be Vigilant and Behave, The Secret History of 2008 and Judge Dredd, because it is a brilliant book, absolutely brilliant. Watch this space for some more Pat. Okay, they're my two.
Nice. Dan, do you have any shout outs?
I've got something on the horizon with a little project that might involve the pod, but I've got a kind of, I've been one of those annoying people that say I've got something to talk about but I can't talk about it.
Oh.
Essentially.
So, you're never annoying, Dan. Never annoying.
Oh, thank you.
Unless you're you're never annoying, Dan. You're never in there. Now, I've just got one shout out this week. Well, I've probably got loads. I always think of about 10 after every show. I just want to give a shout out to the Etherington brothers. As this week, I got a Kickstarter through. They're hugely popular Kickstarter, Stransky. And this week, the books came through. They said I was the first person to post a picture. Yes, I'm such a hipster. But I got the book, and oh my word, those boys know how to put out a good quality book. It's just Stransky is a sort of hardback sort of book that isn't a story, but it's kind of, there's lots of bits of artwork for a story that doesn't exist, if that makes sense. Lots of posters. There's loads of designs, and there's a 3D section. You get 3D glasses. But that makes me cross-eyed, so I can't see. I can't use that bit.
Did you put pictures of it up on your Snapchat account?
No.
I don't know what Snapchat is. So I haven't got a clue.
To be fair, I see their stuff come up on Twitter, like the tutorial stuff, and it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, they're there at SICE, so pop by and buy a copy of that book yourself. There you go.
It's amazing. So there you go. So that was a. That was kind of a mini recommendation. I just wanted to say thanks for the book. But speaking of recommendations, do we have any? We're going to do something special. I know Tony's got a few this week. So we're going to give you lovely listeners the Hot Esmond Minute, right?
Yeah.
As Tony's got several
men
books.
Men and women, I'm not proud. You know.
Yep. You're going to have one sexy minute. That's all you got.
We'll see if this works. I'm a bit of a shit connection as well, aren't I? But let's see if it works.
Basically, Tony's going to have these recommendations. For each recommendation, he has 1 minute. I have a stop clock with me. So let's see how well he does, because we know he
I've got it down. I think I'm going under a minute. I think this will be fine. I've got no problem with this.
You know how he likes to go in deep. when it comes to grow up, Dan. Come on, you better. You're better than that.
<Well said.
laughs> But let's see. So, How do we want to do it, Tony? Do you want to say the title of the book and then I give you a minute?
Or do you just say go and then I'll do it.
Okay. How's that? Right. So here is here's book one. You ready, Tony?
Yeah, I'm ready.
And go.
Right, the first book is Human Garbage by Josh Hicks. I've got sent this as a review copy, but I bumped into Josh at LCAF. It's an anthology published by Good Comics. It's his first book with Good Comics. The contents page is basically the best contents page ever done in a comic, where he's sitting on the toilet and he's reading through what is in the book and commenting on how much he likes it. So that's like the best thing ever, isn't it? Story one perfectly epitomises my experiences of going to a nightclub and not fitting in. There's a poll page of just different people dancing and him going, and then a picture of him going, taxi. And he wears check shirts, which are kind of like, and that book is highly recommended. Human Garbage, Josh Hicks. There you go. How was that?
Oh, wow. That was 42 seconds.
Yes. Get in.
Right. Are you ready for book two? Are you going to do you're going to do all your books in a minute, aren't you?
Yep, I got two for you two as well coming up. So
right, okay,
I'll
brilliant. Okay, right, yep. Right, book two. Are you ready?
Yep.
And go.
Book two is Colossi 4 from Vault Comics by our friend of the show, because I know people like it when I say that, Ricardo Moe. It is it's the one that's the Land of the Giants, as if it was a comic book, but it goes much further than that now. It's got a little bit of the Micronauts in there, a bit of the sort of conspiracy theory as well, a bit of a sort of alien invasion. Great characters, beautiful art, and extraordinarily good colouring. The end of it is worthy of the end of a Planet of the Apes movie. It is that good, and it had me giggling on the train as I read it. Ricardo sent it through to me. Good egg. Go out and get it. I think it's the last issue for the moment of Colossi from Vault Comics. There you go.
38 seconds. Woo!
Oh, I see. Who says I talk too much, eh?
I don't know you, Dan. I didn't think this was possible, did you?
That was certainly quick.
That's what she said.
Light your cigarette. Right, okay.
The next two are easy ones as well. I'm ready. Go on.
Right.
I'll do two in a minute. Watch this. I'll do two in a minute. You ready?
Oh, my word. I wonder
Fuck
how many times
you all. I'll do two in a minute.
I wonder how many times he said that in his life. Right. Ready, set, and go.
Right, first of the two is Boxes, issue 3. I bought it at LCAF. I bought 1-3, and I bought 2 sketches of Todd Oliver. Another book that will sort of play wild and free with your brain box. Nutty with some cool characters. My favourite one being Accidental Cannibal. Yes. The other one is The Human Beings, issue 2, by Stuart McCune, Millicent Barnes Comics. I can't talk about it.
You can't. Right, hang on.
I certainly see everyone's praising The Human Beings, the comic.
Yeah.
It's getting a lot of
I've written the review. I had a big chat with Stuart, but I can't pull the trigger on it yet. We're not ready to release it yet. So he's asked me, can I hold back on it till everyone sees, starts sending them out and gets it ready. But fuck me, it's good.
Do you know what? I'm sure it is. Stuart's a good man. But you can't say that you did two in a minute when one of them
I
said
one.
The title and then you said, I can't talk about it. What's that?
It's a bit of a cheat, but who said we're not allowed to cheat?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's true.
I base my life on cheating. Right, I've got the two now. They've got two now, which he recommends, for one for Dan and then one for you, Vince.
Okay.
Yeah. Is this a minute as well? Okay.
And these are minutes each. Yeah, we'll do a minute on each of these. Yeah.
Okay. And go.
First one for Dan. Shadow Masters came out in October 1989. Have you read this, Dan?
No. No.
It's the origins of the mysterious ninjas seen in the pages of The Punisher, prestige format in 4 issues. If you don't know what prestige format is, you need to read more comics. Written by Carl Potts, art by Dan Lourdes, inks by Russ Heath and Todd Smith, colours by Steve Olive. Covers also by Jim Lee, Mark Texeira. It's an ongoing story of a group of fictional ninjas who first appeared in The Punisher and how their origins are and how they carry on to fight a sort of shadowy government organisation in Japan that spreads worldwide. There you go.
That sounds ace.
Yeah, it's like an action movie, a 90s action movie.
30 seconds. Bloody hell. That's how long it took you to please Dan. So.
Five off
and
your best.
The reason I'm doing these recommends for you two is because it's our 2-year anniversary.
Yeah, did you know that, Dan?
No, I did not know that.
Did you get us a gift?
No, did he fuck? Look at this. Yeah.
And,
well, funny you should mention that because I did look up what 2-year. You know, 1 year you get paper, 2 year you get bums. So I'm going to take a picture of me mooning, sending it to you. It's coming in the post. That's not as bad as what I said before we started recording, which I've been chuckling earlier.
I'm hanging out the train window. That's a callback to a joke we made earlier in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god.
Rewind an hour. You did that last week and that made me laugh so much. Honestly.
2 years and we're still doing fucking knob and bum jokes. This is how is this still going? I don't know. Okay, right. Okay, the last recommend of the week. I'm very impressed, Tony. This is
superb.
Right, last one. Ready, set, go.
Right, this is for you, Vince. The recommendation for you: Helheim, Volume 1, The Witch War. Have you read this?
Nope.
Written by Cullen Bunn, illustrated by Joel Jones. Really lovely illustrations. The colours by Nick Folardo, letters by Ed Brisson, published by Oni Press. Opens in 580 AD. A bunch of Vikings being chased across the earth by a sort of another tribe who would appear to have some sort of cannibal wild boy stroke mystical thing to them. One of them gets killed, gets resurrected into a sort of Viking Frankenstein with a heart, and he can talk and communicate, and then bloody battle follows bloody battle. Is he to be trusted? Who is he fighting for? And the sort of tribes align to either get behind him or get against him. Very, very good. Really violent, but like a monster story set in the Viking times. Gorgeous stuff.
That sounds amazing. Like it.
Right, that's being added to the wish list, and that was 47 yeah. seconds.
Oh, that's quite a long one. There you go.
But no, that sounds amazing. Cullen Bunn loves his historical.
Yeah, I think you'll like it, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's a sequel to it, like Daughters of Helheim or Sisters of Helheim or something, which I haven't read, but this is really good stuff. Really, really lovely stuff, yeah.
Nice. Right.
There you go.
Dan, you can go
what
last.
About you too?
You can go last this week, Dan.
Yeah, fine.
And my pick for this week is probably one that a lot of our listeners know about or have read, and that is an Image book known as Headlopper from Andrew McLean with Mike Spicer. Mike Spicer colours, is written and drawn by Andrew McLean, and it's coloured by Mike Spicer all except chapter 3. It's Headlopper and the Island or A Plague of Beasts. What can I say about this book? it is stunning. It's been on my wish list.
Amazing. I follow it. I bought the first issue, which was extra long. I think it was an extra long first issue, wasn't
yes.
it? I think
I got it digitally, and then I waited to because I thought I want this in print on my shelf.
I know Matt Harrow is a huge fan of his work. I follow him on Instagram, and he puts out some gorgeous stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Yeah. The basic setup from the back of the book is the Headlopper Norgal, as he says throughout the book, because everyone keeps calling him Headlopper, and he says, just call me Norgal. and the nagging severed head of Agatha Blue Witch arrive on the Isle of Barrow to find it overrun with beasts, the minions of the sorcerer of the Black Bog. When Queen Abigail hires Norgal and Agatha to slay the sorcerer, our heroes trek across the island, relieving the horrors of their heads and playing right into the hands of a master manipulator. The book is 1-4 of Headlopper. But that by no means you're getting an 80-page book. No, this is a beast. It's a really nice collection, this. There's pin-ups in the back. There's maps. He's so many pin-ups. I didn't realise. You know,
right.
He's obviously an artist that has a... You know, I think with the nature of this character, who is just a badass travelling this world with a decapitated head of a witch, who is almost the comedy relief of the book.
Right.
She's so funny. And the monsters are amazing, and I just can't recommend it enough. This is it's kinetic, it's this sparky dialogue. He knows how to write that sort of medieval sort of Tolkien, well, not Tolkien-esque, but you know when a fantasy epic gets the dialogue just right. McLean writes that just superbly. Everyone's going to talk about his artwork on it, but the writing itself, just the pacing, everything is just absolutely top notch. So many people out there probably have it. If you haven't heard of it, I'll do what I normally do, post on the Facebook group, just so you can see what I'm talking about. But the dude knows how to do action scenes. Plus, it's there's decapitations, there's gore, you could quite easily do over the top action scenes and stuff, but it's still a really nicely coloured book. It's quite bright. It's brighter than you'd expect. So it's got such a lovely touch of colour. So yeah, I cannot recommend this enough.
I've read the first issue, but I know that Ken Reynolds again put it on when we were doing that What You're Reading This Week. I think he put it up, didn't he?
Yeah. Have you read this yet, Dan?
No.
Get on it, son. It's really, really, really good. To finish off, I think in the words of Scotty Young, he says, there are normal comics, and then there's a comic that has a giant bearded guy with a big fuck you sword that cuts off the heads of all those other comics. That comic is Headlopper, and it's great.
Awesome. So it does what it says on the tin.
It does exactly
chops
what
heads off.
Yeah,
a lot as well.
Yep. Yeah. So he even gets swallowed by a beast and cuts its head off from the inside. So how can you not love that?
Excellent.
So that was mine. Dan, what is your recommendation?
This is one sent in to us by the Dead Canary Boys Company. Dead Canary Comics presents Adventures in Science. It's currently on Kickstarter. They've got, by the time you hear this show, there will be 15 days to go on it. So they've already hit their target and they're sailing over it, so get involved. The first pledge is £10. It's a hard copy of the book. It's fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really good. I'll quickly read the blurb they put down. Welcome to 10 Wicked Visions of Mankind's Frighteningly Fantastic Future. Adventures in Science is a neon-soaked, dark comic, technicolor graphic anthology daring to tell the tales of imagined futures. It's a whole slew of great artists and creators, and they've each taken like a section where they kind of illustrate a story. I'll read out some of the names. You've got Shaky Kane's doing the cover, Jason Burrows, Krent Abel, Ellie Powell, Casper Wingard, Mark Stafford. A new chap that I hadn't come across before is Vincenzo Sancioni. He's done some work on like a Lovecraft thing. It's absolutely great. They're all on the Kickstarter page, but it's really worth checking out.
I got to meet Krent Abel at Christmas, actually. He's a very dark guy, but with some just incredibly interesting artwork. I think if you go on YouTube, there's a movie about him, actually, I think.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. Yeah.
But the preview they sent over, I think it's got four or five tales in it, and they're really well done. Essentially, they each tackle a strong concept. It does what good science fiction does, is asks a question and hopefully answers it within the pages of the comic. And they're really well done. There's a great one where time travelers go back, like a chav couple go back to experience the Titanic, and the kind of like the husband's complaining to the wife they've got to be on deck at this certain time to see the iceberg, and they're sort of reveling in all this stuff that's going on around them. Because at first they think the trip's really crap because not much is going on, and the food that they're being given is like, that is not great. And then when it starts all kicking off, they're absolutely loving it. And it's got a nice little sting in the tail. So that's a really good one. To be fair, we've said it before about anthology. Sometimes you get hits and misses. This one's just hit. Brilliant. Oh,
that's awesome. Killer, is it? Yeah.
Really good.
It's like a sort of future shock type story, is it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the stories were kind of like a twist or a concept that they played.
Yeah, Mary sort of ending. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, really good.
The
really
Dead Canary Boys know how to put a book together, don't they? It's just great stuff.
Yeah. You got to love Shaky as well. Yeah. Anything with him on.
It's a great.
It's a must buy, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. The cover's a real callback to kind of those old kind of the 1950s science magazines, but with the Shaky Kane twist on it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Good.
Awesome.
So check that out.
There you go.
Yep.
So there will be plenty of links in the show notes this week. We've given you more information about our personal lives this week, and also a bunch of great comics to check out.
Yeah.
And also a warning what not to do when you're on a train or stuck in traffic.
He said, don't blow on the chips, they're not cold.
Oh dear. Have you ever been caught short, folks? There's several different ways.
We don't want to know.
Please do email us with that. We will read it out on the show.
Yes, we will. We will indeed. No, we hope you enjoyed the show. If there's anything that we've glossed over or any details that we've got wrong and you want to correct us, I'm sure there is.
Fucking everything.
Get in touch with us at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Also, the Awesome Pod Jam piece is still going strong. Yep. So if you've got a character you want to add to it, highres.png, 300 yep. DPI, decent size, send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and we'll be showing up another version of that soon. Follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod. We've got another guest on this week, and it's a convention guest. Oh, so there'll be lots of convention talk. So we'll probably do some polls this coming week, so check out that. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And it's taken over the nation. It's taken over the web. We all know where the coolest place to go on Facebook is. But if you can't get in there, please join the group, Awesome Comics Talk. I know we big it up a lot, but there's just great conversation that goes on each week.
And yeah, there is.
We're talking art process, writing process, convention talk, and also sometimes just people posting up critiques and just some bits of their artwork and stuff.
Yeah, we're interested to hear what you're reading as well. There's little bits of the small press and the main comics field that we don't always see into, and we'd be interested to see if there's anything that we're missing. Yeah. Please let us know,
And of course, we post up a comment thread about this episode as well. So once you finish listening to this, get on the group talk and let us know what you think about the episode, and just put the world to rights. That's what we do.
I'd like to also just a little shout out to Mr. Webster and just say, if I don't get first look at that comic you're doing, they'll be in trouble, my friend. He sent me something today which I cannot talk about, which as you two both know about, and it just looks like the best thing I've ever seen. His
quality.
I didn't realise how much of a Larry David he is, and I'm so proud of him for it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And thank you all for listening, whether it is at the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a nice review. We need a few more. We always like them. We like people saying nice things about us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And horrible things.
Yeah. Well, I don't listen to those because basically my ego is so fragile that I can't take it.
They're all from me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep, your train photos are legendary. And if you listen to us on Stitcher or the Podnose Network or wherever you found us, thank you very much and hope you enjoyed the show. Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Who wants to go first?
Tony. Okay, shall I? If you go to neveronanything.blogspot.com, you can find some stuff I'll be putting up this week, actually. And if you go to EZOHYZ on Twitter, you'll find me.
There you go. And where can people find you, Dan?
On Twitter is at Vanguard Comic, and I'm on the last four or five pages of Vanguard, which you can read at vanguardcomic.com. That's issue 13, done and dusted.
Nice, well done.
It's been fucking going 7 years. I've been doing that.
That's good, mate. That is fucking. You know we're proud of you around that. Yeah. But that is fucking some achievement, mate. Definitely.
You get less for murder. No,
not it's technically true, but yeah.
But no, it's consistently great, Dan. Yeah, well done.
Oh, thank you.
You still forgot it was our anniversary, but that's all right. It's fine.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. That's another one in the books, folks. Shut this pony down. It's time to ride off into the sunset. Yes.
Yeah, fuck off into the sunset.
Oh, Dan, you're so crude. Isn't he rude? He's horrible, isn't he? He single-handedly makes this show explicit. It's disgraceful.
That mess I made at Oxford Circus is nothing compared to your...
Oh,
so when you crapped in the Big Mac box and threw out the window and it hit that those French tourists.
Oi, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat Big Macs. It was a veggie burger.
He found a bit of fish.
Yeah, if you find an Orbital Comics carrier bag somewhere, don't look in it. That's all I'm going to say.
He's not getting enough protein, so it's an absolute mess. Anyway, thank you for listening, folks. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Get ready for more conventions. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Dan's here. Dan?
Hey.
Dan?
Dan?
Dan? I feel like Alan Partridge.
Hello.
Dan.
Can you hear me?
Hello, yes. Dan. You're right.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you can hear me okay?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah, Skype's kind of like, it's up. Windows 10's updated. And
oh, right.
And he's gone.
Fuck.
No, all he did,
it was me.
All he did was say Windows 10's updated and they took him out.
He disappeared off like a robot.